Reclaiming Camelot by Tanarian, read by Fairy D 123. Chapter 11. In the end, it was another 3 days when he left Ianto, and only his sense of duty meant he eventually moved on to his next destination. Ianto had gone back to work on the Monday and announced he was leaving. It took his friends a grand total of 30 minutes to worm out all the details he thought fit for public consumption, and Jack promptly got invited out for a celebratory drink. Realizing that this was probably the closest he'd get to meeting the parents, Jack had made a special effort to impress, only to find that it wasn't necessary, and he was already accepted simply by virtue of his having made Ianto happy. It had been a while since he'd kicked back and spent time with ordinary people, and he'd found that he'd quite enjoyed it. The gang had been delighted when he had let slip that Ianto would only be going as far as Cardiff. He realized they had assumed that he would be taking him back to America, and he grinned when he realized that he had climbed another couple of notches because he was staying in Wales. He got even more kudos when he drew on some of the things Ianto had told him, to make them think he'd taken the time to immerse himself in the history of Aberystwyth. He'd met Ianto's exasperated eyes across the room and let the grin out. Time to shove Mr. Jones a little off balance. "But I'm especially looking forward to next January and St. Dwynwen's Day," he said with a smile. "I'll have a special reason to celebrate it this time around." He lifted his glass in a silent toast to Ianto, and had the satisfaction of seeing the other man blush furiously. The others crowed over this display and teased him unmercifully.
"We'll still be able to see you if you're only in Cardiff," Katrin said in satisfaction.
A flicker of alarm had come and gone in Ianto's eyes, and he was very obviously racking his brain to come up with a reason why that would be impossible, when Jack took the matter out of his hands.
"Well, I'd certainly expect him to stay in touch with you," he said smoothly. "But you wouldn't be able to visit him at work, I'm afraid. I'm planning to offer him a position in my firm's research department, but we're a little paranoid about security because we do some work for the government. I'm also hoping that there'll still be a welcome for us when we come back up here. I've got very attached to some of the places around here, and I definitely have fond memories of the ice cream in Aberon."
Ianto blushed again, which started off a new round of jokes and woke a speculative gleam in Gordon's eyes. Later, as they were going back to the house, Ianto gave him a curious look.
"Did you mean that? About my keeping in contact with them?"
"Absolutely," Jack said firmly. "I like them and they're good for you." He gave Ianto a serious look. "It was a mistake to isolate ourselves from the outside world. It got a little too intense and incestuous. I knew it. I just didn't do anything about it."
"At least Gwen still has Reese," Ianto said in total innocence.
Then he gave Jack a sharp look.
"What? Why aren't you telling me?"
Jack took a deep breath.
"Wait until we're back at the house," he said quietly.
He hadn't been looking forward to this. He'd hoped to give Ianto a little more time before sucking him back into the grim little world of Torchwood, but he knew that an evasion would simply anger Ianto and threaten their newborn relationship. The younger man had always bristled when he thought he was being protected or patronized, and Jack didn't think that part of his personality had changed. He broke the news as gently as he could, but the shock was still intense. He knew that part of that stemmed from the fact that Ianto had always been jealous of Gwen, seeing her as a threat to his own strange relationship with Jack, so now he felt bad about having previously wished her ill. Jack had to admit that Gwen had been a little possessive of him, demanding more of him than he had sometimes been willing to give. She had reminded him of Rose, though, so he had been more patient than he might have been otherwise, and he had latched on to the idea that she might be the key to regaining his humanity. By the time he realized he had been looking in the wrong direction, it had been too late, and Gwen had come to see him as a special project that was exclusively hers.
"But why?" Ianto eventually asked. "There were so many other alternatives."
Jack shrugged. "They probably thought she would have been too difficult to retcon effectively." Ianto rolled his eyes.
"Lord, save me from amateurs," he said in disgust. He shot Jack an anxious look.
"What about Tosh?" Glad to be able to give some good news, Jack smiled reassuringly. "She's fine.
She retconned herself to forget what had happened to you, and since London wanted that information—" He stopped a couple of seconds too late and cursed his incautious mouth. Ianto snorted. "Let me guess. They didn't think I'd be able to retcon myself properly. They're fine ones to talk. I could tell you stories about the mistakes they made that would make your hair fall out." Jack practically sagged in relief and was quick to change the subject. Ianto showed an understandable lack of interest in what had happened to Owen, and Jack was quick to foster that attitude. He knew he'd have to tell Ianto what was going on, but he preferred it to be later rather than sooner. And that night as they lay together he also realized that he couldn't leave just yet, because the nightmares were back, and with a vengeance. It had confused him initially why Ianto had always refused to stay with him after they had had sex. He eventually discovered that it was because Ianto suffered from crippling nightmares that frequently had him waking up screaming. The root of the problem lay in what happened at Canary Wharf, but then there had been the chaotic debacle of Lisa's death, followed by the instant incident with the cannibals. Other things had happened after that, and looking back, Jack realized that Ianto had never had any time to stop and catch his emotional balance. He spent every waking moment keeping tight control of his emotions, with the result that his subconscious had a field day as soon as he relaxed into sleep. One of the few things Jack was proud of when he looked back on the strange relationship he had created with Ianto was the fact that he managed to chase those nightmares away. Now they were back, and he was at a loss to understand why, but Ianto pointed out that he was probably still trying to reassimilate the memories he'd regained so abruptly. What he remembered of the dreams was certainly chaotic, and he was embarrassed to be falling back into what he considered to be a weakness. Jack did his best to reassure him, but he wasn't sure he'd succeeded by the time his sense of duty prodded him into accepting that he couldn't stay any longer. "Are you going back to Cardiff?" Ianto asked when Jack told him he had to go. Jack realized he hadn't yet told Ianto that Cardiff had been shut down, and left in the sole custodianship of Andy Davidson. He'd expected a small explosion, but Ianto had just laughed and shaken his head. "I wonder how he convinced himself that he wasn't wasting his time on a load of bollocks," he said with a smile. "I didn't think you had much to do with Andy," Jack said curiously. Ianto shrugged, watching as Jack packed to leave, trying to tell himself that he didn't feel a little bereft at the idea of being left behind, even though he knew that this time it was strictly temporary. "Our paths crossed a couple of times, usually when Gwen did something to start him off and I had to soothe his ruffled feathers. I was glad enough to have him around at the time I—" Now it was his time to stop in mid-sentence and look guilty. "Yes?" Jack asked sharply. "The time that you—" "Ancient history," Ianto said with an offhand gesture. "Everyone has off days, even me," he said in an attempt at levity. Jack made a point of giving him a silent look to let him know that the subject wasn't closed, before turning back to zip up his suitcase. Ianto cast about for a quick change of subject. The last thing he needed was for Jack to be reminded of the danger Ianto had often been exposed to while trying to clear up the messes the team had often left behind. "So, if you're not going to Cardiff, I take it that London is your next stop." "Yes," Jack sighed. "Sooner I find out exactly what's going on and let them know I'm back, the better. There are too many variables at the moment." "You're running a risk," Ianto pointed out, looking uneasy. "If they're killing people—" "Hey! Remember who you're talking to, Yan," Jack said with a grin. "I'm a difficult man to kill. An impossible one to keep dead. Even demons have taken a shot at it and failed." Ianto shook his head. "That cocky attitude is going to get you in really deep shit one day," he muttered. "Fine, do what you want. You usually do," he finished with a sigh. Jack hesitated, then went over to place his hands on Ianto's shoulders. "Look at me," he asked quietly when Ianto dropped his gaze to study his chest. Ianto reluctantly complied, making no attempt to hide his unhappiness. "Something's gone wrong, very wrong, and it's partly because I left when and how I did. I can't help but think that Gwen would still be alive if I'd stuck around, and I need to make that right. Can you understand that?" "Of course I can," Ianto said in exasperation. "I just don't see why you have to walk into the jaws of an obvious trap with your eyes wide open." "Maybe because that's sometimes the best way to ruin a trap," Jack said wryly. "And maybe because there's something that just doesn't add up, and I really have to figure out what it is. I promise not to take any unnecessary risks." When that elicited a strangled laugh from Miento, he had the grace to grin ruefully. "Okay, I won't take any more risks than I always do." "That makes me feel so much better," Miento said dryly. But he stopped protesting, and if his parting kiss to Jack was a little deeper and more desperate than the others, Jack wasn't about to call him on it. He made his way back to London and called briefly to see Tosh and Polly, only to find that Polly was hosting a select party of her friends. He almost managed to escape, but was ruthlessly roped in to add some fizz to a group that had become a little comfortable with itself. Half amused and half exasperated, Jack nevertheless did his duty, knowing that he owed Polly several dozen favours, and this was a fairly painless way to pay one back. He barely recognised Tosh, wearing a 30-style green dress and with her hair piled up and fastened in place with an arrangement of orchids. He paid her outrageous compliments, and she laughed and demanded to know all about Iento. Jack made indignant huffing noises about being jealous, and she laughed some more, her entire face alive and vibrant. Jack wasn't surprised when later in the evening he saw her with a small court of younger men and women around her. It was close to 2 in the morning before the party broke up, and Jack slipped away to the studio flat. It felt a little odd to be on his own, and he felt a vague dissatisfaction as he lay in bed, then told himself that he was being several different kinds of idiot. He fought shy of getting too serious in a relationship, because he had always known that his mortal lover would grow old and die. But travelling with the doctor had allowed him to see the other side of the coin. Yes, you could keep the relationship platonic. You could even leave the people you'd come to care for behind, safe and able to create a new life for themselves. But you couldn't stop yourself from caring for them in the first place, and the grief and pain of leaving a friend behind was every bit as painful as that of abandoning a lover. The only way to be truly safe was to hold yourself completely aloof and refuse to feel anything beyond a mild affection. But if you did that, you lost a pretty big part of your soul. Jack had fallen into that trap. He had imagined that a series of light-hearted and purely physical encounters, coupled with a paternal affection for a chosen few, was the best path to take. He'd done so, often with gritted teeth determination, and then wondered why he had felt more and more detached and strange. He hadn't recognized the odd inner pain as being his soul's silent wail of suffocation, and he had pinned all of his hopes on the doctor being able to solve everything with one wave of his sonic screwdriver. He was bitterly disappointed to find that it wasn't going to be that easy. But he was also aware of a fire in his heart and a lightness in his step that hadn't been there for a long, long time. He still had a way to go, he knew, but he was certain that he needed to have Iento walking the same path with him for as long as the Welshman wanted to. The following morning he got a call from the Admiralty, advising him that Admiral Jackson had received his message and was willing to meet with him at 11. A quick call to Doris told Jack that Lethbridge Stewart had been in contact with her, and had been told that Jack was looking for him.
"I'm afraid he said that if you wanted to go gallivanting off without so much as a buy or leave, you'd have to put up with other people being a bit slow to get back to you," Doris said apologetically. "I told him, of course, and he said that he'd ring again this weekend, so if you have a message for him, I can pass it on."
Jack sighed. Sir Lethbridge Stewart was still the irascible force to be reckoned with, that Jack remembered clashing with when he was in charge of UNIT. "Can you give him my mobile phone number and tell him I need to speak to him about Torchwood?" he asked mildly. He wasn't worried about telling Doris anything. The woman might look and sound like the ultimate distillation of the clichéd country Englishwoman, but she possessed 2 degrees, had written several academically respected history books, and was a prime mover and shaker in several charities.
"Of course I shall. Do you want me to put the screws on him, Jack?"
Jack laughed. He always loved hearing Doris come out with film noir comments in her gentle English accent. He'd rather imagine that was why she did it for him. Maybe one or two, and he might need the old bear to do some roaring.
"That will probably delight him," Doris observed as she rang off.
A few minutes after 11, and Jack was ushered into the office of Admiral Ben Jackson. A lot greyer and a little bit stockier than he had been when he travelled with the doctor. Jackson gave Jack a raking look and snorted. "Still looking for like a reject from a film set, I see," he growled.
"I prefer to consider it a timeless classic look," Jack said mildly.
"Blasted Popinjay," the Admiral grumbled, then grinned and held out a hand to give Jack a hearty handshake. "How is the old man?" he asked. "Worse than ever," Jack said ruefully, then grinned as Ben gave a bark of laughter. "Coffee?" Ben asked, then buzzed for his aid when Jack nodded eagerly. "Two coffees, Sarah, and knowing this menace, there had better be some pastries when you bring them in." The young woman gave a quick grin and a nod before disappearing. "So, why the demand to see me?" Ben continued once she had closed the door behind her. "It's usually Polly you come up here to see." As always, there was the slight gleam of jealousy in Jackson's eyes. Although he and Polly had never got around to marrying, they were extremely close friends, and Jack knew that both of them often wondered if they might have made a mistake by not taking their relationship that little bit further. Ben hadn't known Jack for as long as Polly, and he was unaware of his immortality, but he felt a certain protectiveness towards Polly, and he had very obviously identified Jack as trouble with a capital T. Jack took considerable delight in living down to that reputation most of the time to Polly's exasperation, but right now he wasn't in the mood. "I need to talk to you about Torchwood," he said without preamble. That earned him a sharp look from the Admiral, but before he could say anything the door opened to reveal Sarah with a tray that held the promised coffee and a small plate piled high with different pastries. By the time she had poured both men a cup apiece, handed out the pastries and gone back out, Jackson had had time to regain his composure. "Finally got around to remembering your responsibilities, have you?" he said sharply. "I never forgot my responsibilities," Jack retorted. "I had to leave for personal reasons, but I always intended to return." "Might have been more to the point to warn the rest of us that you were going to vanish off the face of the blasted planet," the Admiral growled. "Still, what's done is done. You know we reactivated Torchwood London?" Jack nodded. "Much smaller, of course, and we've insisted that it works a lot more closely with the UNIT. But we managed to keep its independence. Most of us agreed that tying it to the government would be a total disaster. Harriet Jones wasn't too pleased with that, and the leader of the opposition didn't exactly toss rose petals at us, but the last thing we need is something as powerful as Torchwood to be subject to a bunch of fly-by-nights that are constantly being held hostage by soundbites and pressure groups. So, how come you let them come back with the same attitudes and methods as the bunch that nearly got us killed the last time?" Jack demanded. Jackson looked genuinely confused. "What's that supposed to mean?" Jack let him know in no uncertain terms. But the Admiral shook his head vigorously when he'd finished. "Not possible. Ben, no. Hear me out," Jackson said, lifting a hand. "I know the people we've put in charge, Jack. They were there at Canary Wharf, and how they survived with their sanity intact is a mystery to me. But I've never come across a bunch more eager to make amends in my life. None of them would condone the kind of behaviour you've described, and on that I would be willing to stake my life." "With all due respect, Ben," Jack said quietly, "it's not your life I'm worried about." Jackson's words had planted a seed of doubt in his mind, however, and Ben must have seen it. "Look, why don't I arrange for you to go and meet them? Even if you're right and I'm wrong, they won't be able to do anything to you when they know I'm aware you're back and you went to see them." Jack nodded. "I'd appreciate it," he said, and bit into a pastry. Jackson looked at him and then gave a snort of laughter. "Which is what you wanted all along, of course." He shook his head and laughed. "Did it even occur to you just to ask?" Jack shrugged. "More fun this way," he said with a smile. 20 minutes later, and armed with an appointment to see the current head of Torchwood London at 3 o'clock, Jack left the Admiralty, blinking in the bright sunlight that had appeared while he was indoors, then slammed to a halt and stared. Ianto was leaning against the side of his car, dressed in a black-on-black ensemble that was only leavened by a silver pewter tie. He was wearing dark glasses against the sunshine and looked... "You look incredible," Jack said when he recovered and went to meet him. Ianto grinned and pulled down the glasses to look at him over the tops. "I've been told I look very James Bond by a bunch of Japanese tourists," he said in amusement. "I think that was a compliment." "You make James Bond look like a washerwoman," Jack said with complete conviction, and grinned at the laugh that earned him. "Please don't take this the wrong way, Yan, but what are you doing here?" The laughter died on Yanto's face, and he gave Jack a grim look. "I phoned Tosh. She didn't realize that you'd been your usually miserly self with the truth, and by the time she did it was too late, and I made her tell me everything." "Damn!" Jack muttered, then raised a hand when he saw the flare of anger in Ianto's eyes. "It's not what you think, Ianto." "Oh? It looks very much like it's business as usual where you're concerned, Captain," Ianto snapped. Jack winced. "Yan?" "No! I am tired of being treated like a child, Jack," Ianto said angrily. "When were you planning on telling me the truth? Or was I going to be kept in the dark because I'm still just the tea boy? I am not that person anymore. You're the target of a bunch of unknown people for unknown reasons, and the longer I can stop you from walking around with a target pinned on you, the better I'll like it," Jack snapped back. "For God's sake, Ianto, I just screwed up your life and dragged you back into my nasty little playground. Don't you dare blame me for trying to do my best to soften the blow for as long as possible." He was surprised to find that he was shaking, and Ianto seemed just as taken aback because a lot of the anger left his face. "I don't like the idea of you wandering around with no one watching your back," he said unhappily. "Don't send me away." Jack pulled in a deep breath to calm himself and managed to smile. "Not much good now, is it? I thought you had to work a notice period." Ianto was also visibly calming down, but it had always been that way when they had lost their tempers. He was the slower to ignite, blue like Krakatoa, and then calmed down almost immediately. Jack was quick to lose it and could hold on to the rage for longer. "We worked something out." Jack continued to look at him and he gave a grunt of exasperation. "I told them an emergency had come up and I took a sabbatical. I'll have to go back and work out my notice later on. But for now, I want to make sure you don't do anything stupid." Jack held his gaze for another minute or so and saw that he wasn't going to get any further concessions. To his surprise, he was aware of a feeling of relief. He was used to being a lone wolf. Even when he had led Torchwood III, it had always been on his terms, and he had kept his own counsel, and very rarely explained himself. Seeing the way Ianto had just stood up to him, he had a feeling that wasn't going to be tolerated in future, and he was actually a little pleased at the thought. He had been more like a partner while he had been with the doctor, and he had realized that he quite liked the camaraderie. "Okay, let's go then. Which one of us is going to drive?" Ianto gave him a sudden grin. "Jack, come on. We're in London. No way am I letting you behind the wheel of a car. My nerves just wouldn't be able to take it." Torchwood London had returned to its original headquarters down in Greenwich. Jack paused to admire the graceful old Victorian building before climbing the steps to the ornate doors, where a quietly efficient security guard quizzed them before phoning to confirm their appointments. "If you'll just stand here for a moment, sirs," he said politely, indicating a patterned portion of the flagstones. Jack and Ianto did as he asked, and he felt a faint tingling pass through their bodies. Jack recognized the signature of a Mopin scanner, and wondered if he could catch one for Cardiff. Non-invasive, but pretty good at recognizing non-humans, it would have stopped someone like Mary from getting in without tripping alarms. It wasn't so sensitive that it could detect more subtle variances. It would pass him as human, for instance, but damn useful as a first-level clearance device. "Thank you, sirs. If you go through, someone will be waiting for you in the foyer to escort you to your meeting." They walked through to find themselves in a tastefully ornate foyer. The original Tortured London had been purpose-built in the high Gothic style, with no expense spared, and successive generations had taken care to incorporate modern elements without sacrificing the original proportions and beauty. The modern labs, archives, and testing ranges had been built underground, while the original building had been retained for admin, recreation, and training purposes. Not for the first time, Jack thought Yvonne had been crazy to abandon this for a glitzy phallic symbol. A girl in a smart skirt suit was waiting for them, and Jack's heart sank. To his relief, as they were escorted further into the building, he saw that suits were matched by more casual attire on a roughly 50-50 basis. There also seemed to be a lot of people around, given that James had told him that the new complement of Torchwood was around 30. He was pretty certain he'd seen close to that number, although some of them had been wearing unit insignia, guests were probably visitors. They were watching Jack and Ianto pretty intently as they passed. No, Jack realized after a moment. They were watching Ianto. Light dawned and he swallowed a smile. It was going to be fun when Ianto finally put two and two together. "Ever get those dreams when you think you've turned up to work stark naked?" Ianto finally asked in exasperation. "You must have one hell of a reputation around here." Jack chuckled, but the girl escorting them turned to give Ianto a wide-eyed look.
"It's not just Captain Harkness, sir," she offered.
Ianto blinked, then turned to look at Jack and mouthed,
"Sir?"
with a raised eyebrow. Jack continued to grin and watched as two and two gradually exchanged wedding vows and produced four.
No.
Tell me they don't. Take it on the chin, Ianto, Jack said with a smile. It's not every day people get to see a returning hero. He did his best not to laugh out loud at the pithy-sounding Welsh comment he got in return. The girl finally brought them in front of a door and knocked politely before opening it to announce them. As they walked through, she gave them a shy smile.
"It was an honour to meet you both," she said,
before blushing furiously and backing out, closing the door behind her. "Bloody hell!" Ianto said with feeling. "I see you've still got a mouth on you, Taz," came an unfamiliar male voice. Jack watched as a man who looked to be in his late 30s limped in from another room. Short and stocky, with prematurely grey hair, he had a fond smile on his face as he looked at Ianto and his brown eyes were gleaming with what looked like genuine amusement. "Peter!" Ianto yelped in delight and lunged forward, ignoring the outstretched hand and enveloping the man in a bear hug. "Ach! Remember I need to breathe, you Welsh lunatic!" Peter wheezed, poking him in the side. He didn't look all that upset, however, and he grabbed at Ianto's arm when he would have backed off, keeping him close. "Hell, it's good to see you again. We were getting a mite frantic when we couldn't trace you." Ianto frowned. "Didn't you trust me to retcon myself properly? Damn it, Peter, you of all people should have known that I do good work." "Darling, it wasn't that we were worried about," drawled a woman's husky voice. "It was the nasty vermin that were after you that were giving us sleepless nights." Jack felt the kick of hormones as the woman came into view. She was probably as old as Peter, but she held herself with the flawless grace of a dancer or martial arts expert. She was wearing a trouser suit, but with a blouse of such eye-searing pattern that Jack could feel his retinas shutting down in self-defense. Dark chestnut-brown hair was held back from her face by a scarf of the same material. She had sharp, angular features that could be described as hawkish or striking, depending on your mood. Even from this distance, Jack could feel the force of the personality behind the pale blue eyes, and he went over to offer his hand. "Captain Jack Harkness," he said, taking the hand she held out and dropping a light kiss on it. "A pleasure to meet you, miss." "Meet Danielle Oldfield, Jack," Ianto said, a hint of laughter in his voice. "I see your colour blindness is as bad as ever, Danielle."
"And I see that you are still the same fashion Philistine as you ever were, Ianto," Danielle sniffed.
She bestowed a gracious smile on Jack. "Your reputation precedes you, Captain, but you seem to be living up to it. I'm delighted to meet you, especially since you've restored Ianto to us. The others will all sleep that little easier tonight." "Come on in," Peter said, gesturing at them to go into the inner office. "The others are waiting." The others proved to be another two women and two men. One of the women was wearing a white lab coat and looked vaguely familiar to Jack. One of the men was wearing a military uniform with a unit badge on it, and the other man wore a suit that looked like he had slept in it. The last woman was a dusky-skinned, motherly type. "Let me introduce everyone," Peter said, as he eased himself onto a seat. He indicated the woman in the lab coat. "This is Liz Shaw, who has kindly agreed to a secondment from UNIT in order to help us re-establish our labs." Jack realized that she was familiar from a photo he had seen of the doctor when he had been temporarily exiled to Earth. "We also have the invaluable services of Captain Leo Maguire from UNIT, Ryan Ignatius, who is in charge of archiving, and Mary Samiri, who keeps our computers running for us, no matter how badly we misuse them. My name is Peter Ellison, and I used to be head of the field agents before Canary Wharf," and a close brush with an exploding generator. "Danielle Oldfield is in charge of actually running this place and making sure we keep our house in order. Neither of you need any introducing to us, so if you'd like to take a seat apiece, we can get on with things." Danielle drifted over to where refreshments had been laid out and gracefully offered them coffee and a choice of biscuits or fruit. Once the niceties had been taken care of, Jack wondered how to begin, but Ianto beat him to it. "Why did you allow Gwen Cooper to be killed?" he demanded. "We didn't," Peter said in shock, and the others all nodded vigorously. "Come on, Ianto, you know I'd never countenance anything like that. Hell, I wouldn't have condoned it in the bad old days." "You told everyone you were shutting down Cardiff. Gwen made it clear she wasn't going to accept a transfer back to London, and it would have been a bugger to wreck on her," Ianto persisted. 3 days later, and she's dead from a hit and run. That's one hell of a coincidence, Peter." "I didn't say she wasn't murdered," Peter admitted. "But it wasn't us who did it, though."
"Then who?"
"Manus Day," Jack said quietly. He watched the wave of consternation that swept through the others and sighed. "I thought we'd got rid of them."
"So did we," Danielle said ruefully. "In fact, most of us didn't even know who and what they were, and we made some mistakes because of that."
"Torchwood's last brush with them had seemed pretty conclusive, Captain," Peter said with a shrug. "I know that your father was involved in that particular battle."
"Father?" Jack thought in confusion, but said nothing.
"And the number of casualties and the destruction of their headquarters in Cambridge seemed to indicate that they were a spent force. I think that might have been a little premature."
"What have you got?" Jack demanded.
"Small pieces of what is obviously a much larger puzzle," Samiri put in. "One of the veterans had been acting oddly for a while before he vanished, before we could wreck on him. 2 weeks later, there was an extremely professional raid in one of the storehouses containing our archives. Whoever was behind it was extremely professional, knew how to circumvent the security measures, and also knew exactly what they were after."
"Unit had also been monitoring attempts to subvert some of our people," Captain Maguire put in. He pulled a face. "Some of those attempts were successful. One of our people played along to see if he could find out who was behind it, and he managed to get the name Manus Day before he was found out and killed." His mouth tightened, and a flicker of pain showed in his eyes for a moment. "A hit-and-run accident," he said, shooting a glance at Ianto.
"We got one other person inside the organization," Danielle took up the story. "He was ex-MI5 and volunteered before he suspected that Manus Day had been responsible for a friend's death. He got 2 reports out to us before he was blown. The first one confirmed that it was Manus Day, with all the old baggage, and a new leader who has a definite agenda. The second told us that they were trying to find Ianto, although he hadn't been able to find out why. That was the last we heard of him, so we're assuming the worst."
"But why?" Ianto demanded in bewilderment. "What could they possibly want with me?"
"If we knew that, we'd be ahead of the game," Peter said dryly.
"What about external backup?" Jack asked.
Peter made a face.
"We're walking on eggshells, Captain. It took some fancy negotiation for us to be reactivated with our independence intact. We still have some influence, simply because we're still a lot more expert at alien stuff than anyone else. But we can't afford to show any weakness to some of the externals. For some strange reason, Harriet Jones fought in our corner when it came to our independence from the political arena."
Jack said nothing, but he knew why that had happened. Harriet had used Torchwood against the Sycorax, and in doing so had committed an act that could have serious repercussions for the human race. She had done so with honest intentions, not really grasping that she was committing wholesale murder until it was too late. But it had also earned her the rare fury of the Doctor. He had retaliated by very nearly destroying her career, and she had obviously taken his warning to heart. The Doctor gave, but he could also take away. Torchwood had badly needed fixing, but the Earth still needed it to be around.
If they killed Gwen...
Ianto half turned to look at Jack, who nodded. "Fits with their damn M.O.," he said. "The original Manus Day always thought they could do what they liked, and to hell with the consequences. If they killed Gwen, then they've declared war on me. The fact that they think they can take you as well just confirms that." He switched his attention back to the others. "I want Cardiff reactivated," he started to say, then stopped when he saw the expression on their faces. "What?"
"There seems to be a situation in Cardiff," Danielle said after a moment.
"What kind of situation?" Jack demanded. Ryan Ignatius stirred for the same time. a harried expression on his face. After the incident with Abaddon, the rift seemed to slide into a period of inactivity, he said in a quick, nervous voice. That's partly why we decided it would be safe to close Cardiff. When we accessed Torchwood III's records, paused and gave Ianto a worried look when there was a distinct rumble from the Welshmen. We found that there had been other periods of similar inactivity. One had lasted nearly 3 years, so we figured we had some time to catch our breath. He paused, and Jack grinned mirthlessly. If anyone understood the rift, it was the people who had lived with it. Depending on dry records is a bad idea where the rift is concerned, he said mildly, and had the satisfaction of seeing Ignatius wince. We placed a suppressor there that should have dampened any stray activity, the archivist continued, and it worked pretty well for a year. Recently, however, there have been some worrying readings feeding back to us. Do you have them here? Ianto asked sharply. When Ignatius touched some papers involuntarily, he put out his hand and was given them reluctantly. Ianto took one look at them and then handed them to Jack, his eyes huge and dark with concern. Frowning, Jack scanned the readings taken and felt his stomach plummet to his feet. He got to his feet, with Ianto doing the same a second afterwards. We're going back to Cardiff now. We're reactivating 3. I want our stuff back there as soon as possible. Ianto will liaise with you about the details. Captain, Peter asked tentatively, what? You slammed a lid down on a pressure kettle, and the pressure's been building. The rift's going to blow, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to blow hard and strong, and I only hope we can cope with what comes out. We'll give you all the assistance we can, Peter said, and the others all nodded. You can count UNIT in on that, Maguire said. Thanks, but with any luck we can head off the worst of it by doing a controlled blow, Jack said absently. He paused as he went to leave. I'll need some additional personnel for the short term. I'm claiming Tosh back. What's Jane McCrimmon's speciality? Danielle stirred. She's medically trained, spent a couple of years in Africa with the Red Cross, then took a year off to research hemorrhagic diseases. She wound up getting involved with an alien incursion and came to our attention when we were reforming. She has potential, but she also has problems following procedure. She also seems to have a highly evolved ability to attract trouble, or be attracted to it. I'm not sure which. Jack grinned. Sounds just like me. Can I borrow her for the interim? Well, I don't see any problem with that, Peter said after a moment, but I thought you already had a doctor on your roster. Jack felt his smiles slip. Dr. Harper and I are going to have a difference of opinion in a little while, which will result in his finding that he's no longer welcome in Cardiff. He could feel Ianto's gaze on him and knew that he'd have to explain that. Peter nodded. Yeah, I figured as much. Okay, how about you take Dr. McCrimmon for a 3-month trial period, and then we'll review the situation. Do you want anyone to replace Miss Cooper? No, Jack said baldly. The rest of the meeting was taken up with general details about returning 3's property to the hub, and then the meeting broke up. Jack was cautiously pleased with how things had gone, although he could have done without the news of a re-emerging fanatical cult, and the fact that he was going to have an overactive rift on his hands when he got back. Right now, however, he had one more thing to do before they left. "I'll meet you at the car, Ianto," he said carelessly. "I'm sure there are people you want to look up, and..." He stopped when he saw the look he was getting from the Welshman. "Not working, huh?" "Not even close," Ianto said flatly. "What was that about Owen?" Jack considered lying, then realized that doing so would be downright suicidal. He tried to soften the explanation as much as possible, but there was only so much he could do to make betrayal a touchy-feely subject. At the end of it, Ianto's face was at its most unreadable, but Jack was uneasily aware of the glitter in the other man's eyes. "I really think it should be a joint meeting, Captain," Ianto said. "Uh-oh, we're back to Captain," Jack thought. "I don't think the rift's the only thing that's about to blow." It didn't take them long to track down Owen, who had a laboratory to himself on one of the lower levels. The expression on his face when he looked up and saw Jack and Ianto walk in was priceless. "Morning, Owen," Jack said breezily. "Miss me?" Owen opened and closed his mouth a couple of times before he recovered his poise. "Yeah, place hasn't been the same without you." He flickered an uneasy look in Ianto's direction, but Jack knew he wouldn't be getting any signals from that direction. "So, when did you get back?" "Oh, a little while ago. Been bumming around, getting to know what happened while I was away." Jack smiled mirthlessly when Owen flinched. "I understand you were a busy boy back when my back was turned." To his credit, Owen didn't try and pretend ignorance. "What the hell did you expect?" he snarled. "You disappear without a trace and leave us all with our shirts hanging out to dry. We had to survive somehow." "Not at the expense of your fellow team members," Jack said swiftly. Owen snorted. "Oh, please, give me a break. Since when did you fall in love with all that crap? Besides, Iente was not a member of the team. He was just the office cleaner that was your bit on the side." "Say that again, and I will knock your teeth down your throat," Iente said calmly. "You didn't do that great the last time you mixed it with me," Owen sneered. "The last time I mixed it with you, I made the mistake of thinking you only needed a push to come back to your senses," Iente pointed out. "And like some people, I learn from my mistakes." "Yeah, well, maybe I didn't teach you a good enough lesson," Owen snapped. "Better watch your back, T-boy." Jack took an angry step forward, only to find Ianto's hand on his arm. He glanced up, not bothering to hide his anger. He wanted very badly to teach Owen the lesson of his life. "No," Ianto said softly. "He's not worth it." Jack considered arguing for a moment, then saw the warning in Ianto's eyes. He was falling into old habits again, unconsciously belittling Ianto in his eagerness to keep him safe. He was going to have to seriously relearn some old habits. He backed off and was rewarded by the smile he got from Ianto, who then turned back to Owen. "Don't start anything, Owen, because this time I will finish it." "Who the hell do you think you are?" Owen demanded in a brittle voice. Ianto smiled and leaned forward, his eyes gleaming. "I'm myself. I don't have to answer or apologize to you or anyone else. I'm also the person Jack came back to. He had the whole of space and time to choose from, and he chose to come back here. To me. Try and match that any day of the week, Dr. Harper." He turned to go and walk over to Jack, the two of them exchanging a small smile before Ianto adopted his chosen place of standing just a little behind and to Jack's left. Jack saw the twist to Owen's mouth as he watched, and realized that Ianto was right. Just being who they were was enough of a punishment. "You don't have anything like this," he thought to himself. "You'll never have what we have, and the knowledge is like acid running through your veins. I don't need to punish you any more than by showing you what you've lost." "I can understand betrayal in the name of love, Owen. I can even condone it. What I can't accept is betrayal in the name of self-interest. You made your choice, and now you'll have to live with it. You're not welcome at Torchwood 3. He saw the expression of shock on Owen's face and smiled coldly. "Good day, Dr. Harper." He turned and left, knowing that Ianto was right behind him. They walked down the corridor in silence until they got to the lift. "We've just made a bad enemy," Ianto said quietly as they waited for it to arrive. "Is there such a thing as a good one?" Jack asked, even though he agreed. Ianto gave him a small smile. "Yes, the stupid one. Owen isn't stupid, but he can never accept that he's in the wrong, so it won't be long before all of this is my fault." "Worried?" Jack asked gently as they got into the lift and he punched for the ground floor. Ianto shrugged. "Resigned to the inevitability of it, I suppose. It was never going to end well, no matter what we did." He frowned and slid a sideways look at Jack. "I don't need to be shielded like some teenage girl, you know." Jack snorted. "Yes, you do. At least until I teach you a few of the dirtier unarmed combat tricks I know. Which reminds me..." "Already slotted in, Captain," Ianto assured him briskly as they exited the lift and made for the exit. "I was planning on presenting the preliminary rota to you this evening." "Oh, you were you?" Jack said, faking indignation. "I had other plans for this evening, you know." "That's a shame," Ianto said tranquilly. "After we'd finished the admin stuff, I was sort of planning on fucking you senseless over the table." Jack slammed to a halt and watched with his jaw on the ground as Ianto continued to make for the car. After a couple of attempts, he finally managed to regain his voice and hurried after him. "On the other hand," he said a little hoarsely, "I don't have anything set in stone, and it would be a good idea to get into a regular routine." "I thought so as well," Ianto said with a mischievous smile as he got into the car. Back in the lab, Owen raged silently to himself. Who the hell do they think they are? Who the fucking hell gave that jumped-up wanker the right to look down on him like that? After a moment he drew in a calming breath and picked up his mobile, punching in the number his contact had given him. The phone rang 3 times before it was picked up. Yes? Owen didn't hesitate. This wasn't his doing. Harkness and that bloody toy boy of his had forced his hand.
About that offer you made?
It still stands, Dr. Harper.
Good, 'cause I'm in,
Owen said flatly. I'm delighted to hear it. We'll be in touch. The call ended and Owen stashed his phone away again. He was feeling a little worried, a little frightened, and very, very excited. Things had been boring as hell since he'd come back to London. Maybe this was just what he needed to get back on track. And if he could bring Jack and Ianto crawling to him somewhere along the way, well, that would just be the icing on the cake.